Hello, and thank you for listening to the Total Health Podcast. My name is Rosie Piercy. I'm a chiropractor and clinic director, and I find the subject of health fascinating. In this podcast, every fortnight, we'll be discussing health from a different perspective. I hope you enjoy. Hi, I'm Rosie from Total Health Podcast, and I'm here with Dr. Peter Halpert, who is a paediatric consultant at the Royal Berks Hospital in Reading. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
Excellent. Right, so a few questions. Why did you decide to become a doctor?
Honestly, I don't actually know. I remember doing one of those career aptitude tests at school around GCSE time, and it was on the list along with meteorology and brewing technology, and I thought it sounded interesting, and then did some work experience and quite liked it, so applied to medical school. Also thought about being a vet, but you needed higher grades. But yeah, that's how I fell into it, I think.
So it wasn't like a burning desire from when you were five, right, yeah, with a doctor's
dressing
kit.
Up with stethoscopes, no.
None of that.
Unfortunately.
I think my career aptitude test said I should have been a travel agent.
Wow.
Which I don't think I'd be very good at, somehow.
You'd have to go on holiday.
You would, yeah. But anyway, so no, I veered slightly from that thing. Okay, cool. And it wasn't like a real need for you to want to heal the sick then or anything like that?
No, I think that, I want to help people. I think there's always the altruistic, you want to do something useful and you want to help people. But in that, you don't want to walk around trying to cure everyone. I don't think.
Because you can't cure everyone.
You can't cure everyone.
No. And not, you didn't go into brewing technology then?
No, but that is quite tempting.
You can set up like a little home brewing.
Microbrewery at home, yeah. Alternate career.
Yeah, it could be quite fun. So there's lots of different grades of doctors, which most of us maybe who aren't medical don't get the difference between what they are. So can you explain those to us?
So you go through medical school, and so when you're in hospital or at the GPs, you'll often come across medical students, mm-hmm. Who are doing their work experience and learning. Then they qualify and become what used to be called house officers, but probably for the last 10 years or so, they've been called foundation doctors.
So you don't have house officers anymore?
So the old terms of house officer, senior house officer, mm-hmm. and registrars don't technically exist anymore, and they haven't done for about 10 to 15 years. People still use them all the time because it's what everyone knows and it's easier to understand. But so house officers now are the foundation year ones and foundation year twos.
Okay.
And then the SHO grade, so the people who've done their pre-registration years, are now split into what are called core trainees or specialty trainees, depending on which specialty you're in.
Okay.
Which is part of the reason people still refer to them as SHOs, because it's slightly easier.
Okay.
Once you've done that phase of your career, then you will have normally take specialist exams in the specialty you want to be it paediatrics in my case, or surgery or general practice, at which point once you pass those exams, you'll be a specialty trainee of a higher level. It used to be called a registrar.
Okay.
To be honest, still is. Yeah. Most places.
Because I've been to hospital and they have registrar on their backs. Everyone knows what that means.
It's not an official term, but everyone knows what it means, and actually it's easier to use terms that people understand.
Yeah.
And then once you've completed your specialty training, bit in general practice, whatever specialty, you become a consultant or a consultant GP.
Okay, and so how long does that process take?
It depends on the specialty, and you can do extra bits in between. So speaking for my own specialty, from qualifying to being consultant, it will take you at least 10 years.
Okay, so it's not like a quick route then, it's quite a long. Yeah. I guess you have to massive experience to be able to do it. Okay. And is it quite daunting when you're like first out of medical school?
Yes, it's terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember in a less way the first time I was on my own with a patient as a chiropractor, yeah. And you're like, but in my world, no one's going to die, unless things go very, very badly wrong.
It is terrifying, but you always have to remember that there's a much wider team around you who are well aware that it's your first day out of medical school, that You won't have the confidence, and everything you do is double checked, and you've got extremely experienced nurses around you and other healthcare professionals who will
help.
Gently point you in the right direction
if you need
maybe
it.
They think you need it.
Because I can remember when my second was in hospital when he was a little baby, this very, because they always look very young as well, don't they? Particularly
a lot of policemen, apparently.
Yeah, well, I've realised I'm now getting old because the policemen look about 12, and I'm like, surely, how are they driving, you know? But this very young doctor came and started taking blood, just a heel prick, and it was just like awful for her, awful for me. It was just like, I wanted to go, are you okay? And just like, we both survived this, but obviously you can't, because she was like trying really hard, and probably she went out of the room and
cried.
I'm sure
she didn't.
No, I'm sure she, and she was very good, but it was like blood.
Yes.
But anyway, like, I don't care, it's fine. So why did you go into paediatrics?
Again, that wasn't it was just one of those things. I did my, well, cause back in when I qualified in 98, we did do house officer jobs. So I did my house officer jobs and then did an A&E SHO job. Mm-hmm. And then after that, didn't really have a clue, but realised that as I was in A&E, you'd have the queue of casualty notes waiting people waiting to be seen, and the ones that who were children had a little red stripe at the top, and I actually quite like seeing those, so I sort of picked them out.
What does the red stripe mean?
It was a child.
Oh, does that just indicate
a child? Yeah, so it just indicate this is a child, and you could see, oh, there's a child, come on, try and see that one. And I thought, well, actually, if I like seeing them, I should give it a go. So and then was able to apply for a year of paediatrics as an SHO, really enjoyed it, and then carried on with the training from there.
So what makes children more fun to treat than adults for you, is it?
For me, because they are quite fun most of the time. Quite a lot of the time they get better.
Yeah.
Which adults don't often, well they do, but children generally do. And even when they're ill, they can be quite, you know, they're quite funny, entertaining, and it's a more fun atmosphere.
Okay, which must be nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and are they different? Is treating children, are they just like little adults when you treat them,
no.
Or is there more like differences?
In some ways they are, but their physiology, so the way their body works, is slightly different. The diseases, the conditions they get are different to the ones that adults will typically present with. So, you know, lung disease from smoking isn't something we see in children, thankfully.
You'd hope.
Thankfully. Heart disease, high blood pressure, they're not things you generally see in children, but those are the type 2 diabetes, commonest conditions in adults, but we don't tend to see them so much.
So more chronic conditions,
so,
I think. You have to take some time
to
build them up.
So we'll see more acute illnesses, conditions, congenital conditions, conditions children are born with, like the inherited conditions, and more adults, and there's branch paediatrics, which is to do with developmental problems, which is a subspecialist in itself.
Okay, and so then your specialism, your respiratory, is
yes.
That right? Okay, so what does that mean?
So it's lungs. So it's I have respiratory interests, so I have an interest in children with lung problems, be it a slight difficult asthma. Cystic fibrosis, other respiratory problems. Also, part of my interest is neonatal medicine, so newborn babies, preterm babies, because a lot of the problems they have are lung-based.
Okay. So when you were looking after like a neonatal baby, are you looking at, do you get involved before they're born, or is it after they're born?
We will get to meet the families if there's a high likelihood that the baby will be born preterm, so we can counsel the parents about what to expect and what problems we might expect.
And preterm these days, is that before 37 weeks?
Yes.
Okay.
We will generally talk to parents once they've reached 23, 24 weeks gestation.
Okay.
Before that, the general view is that babies aren't viable.
Yeah. I would have been very happy when I got to 30 weeks when I was pregnant. It's like, yes.
Yes.
Could probably survive now. Although my GP was very like, yeah, but you don't want it yet. I was like, no, I know I don't want it yet. But it's kind of done. It just needs to get cooked a bit more. Okay. And so Is there a reason why that interest is particular for you, or is it just because I guess there's other, what are the other specialties in paediatrics?
Oh, well, there's everything that you'd have in adult specialties, so gastroenterology, cardiology, so tummy,
guts, hearts.
any bit of the body you can think of, rheumatology, neurology and epilepsy, development. Trying to think of the other ones so I don't upset any of my colleagues.
Yeah.
Can't think of them, kidneys.
Well done.
All the rest.
Ears?
Not so much, that's more ENT actually.
ENT, yeah. Okay. Is that different?
That's an entirely different specialty.
Okay. Right, okay, good. And is it quite difficult working on tiny little babies? Is it more scary, or I guess less scary the more experienced you get at it?
It's daunting at first. It's a different technical skill.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's any more difficult or any less difficult. It's a skill you have to learn, and the way you do things is slightly different because everything's just much smaller.
Okay.
So, as an example, putting in an IV cannula, so a drip into an adult, is a skill. But we do the same thing in preterm babies. Mm-hmm. It's just, the way you do it is ever so slightly different. It's just something you have to learn.
Okay.
The fact is, it's smaller, and I think there's an emotional thing there as well, which gives a degree of overlay that makes you slightly more anxious about it.
And is the parents, do they help or not help? When my youngest was in hospital, I did think, gosh, you can make it's really hard for people if you were like a more of a worried parent or anxious, because it's hard when you're a parent and your child is sick and you like turn up to hospital and you go, here's the most precious thing in my life, do something.
Fix
it, make it better. And with my kids, it's always been like nothing serious. They just do enough to scare the living daylights out of you. And then 2 hours later, they're bouncing out of hospital.
Which is generally what kids do.
And the parents, I imagine, collapse on the floor, like going, needing a stiff drink. But yeah, so the parents make it harder, easier?
It's part of the job. So yes, we deal with unwell children, and so their parents are going to be anxious and worried. And so does it make it harder or easier? It's something you get used to.
Mm-hmm.
You need the parents there. Children will be more distressed, more anxious, harder to assess if their parents aren't there.
Because it used to be like years and years ago that parents wouldn't stay.
Yes.
And now parents do stay, don't
we? We want them to stay.
Yes. At what age do they not stay?
It's, in terms of when they get old enough?
Yeah.
It's up to the family.
Okay.
So some children, 13, 14, their parents, they're quite happy for their parents not to stay with them overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Some still want them to at 16. It's entirely what works for them.
Okay.
There's no right or wrong.
So there's no like age limit or anything?
No.
Okay, cool. Because I guess most people's like experience of hospital is watching telly, isn't it, really?
Yes.
So like in UK, a Casualty or Holby City.
Yeah.
Or my favourite is ER. Which, you know...
Yes, it's a classic.
It is. Actually rerunning on CBS Drama at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah?
Okay.
See? So you can watch it too again. And it looks so old now.
Yeah, it does, actually.
And Doug Ross looks so young. Very young George Clooney. Because obviously he's a very famous, not real paediatrician, isn't he? So I guess not all paediatricians...
He's pretty much the only famous, not real paediatrician, actually.
Because, I guess it's not a... It's not tend to be a speciality that they have on telly very much, is it?
No, interesting question. I don't know what.
I don't know, because it's more, I guess it's more
mature. They used to have it in Holby, but they don't anymore.
Do they not? I've never watched Holby City. Does it not make you grow up? Do you like watching medical dramas?
They're right. You don't watch it for the medicine.
No, I imagine that maybe not accurate, perhaps.
No. Generally, they have script advisors who are doctors, and so yeah, the medicine is accurate, but does it portray accurately what hospitals are actually like? To a degree, but it's a drama.
So they have to make it exciting and fun. Because I think you kind of get the impression that if you go to hospital, everyone like takes time out of their life to sort out your life at the same time, because that's what happens on Casualty, isn't it, and things like that. But obviously that's...
It's probably less real in that respect. It's like saying, is EastEnders real life?
No, I don't watch EastEnders either. Bit too real life, isn't it? I like nice, warm, fuzzy dramas. You know, not that ER is particularly a fuzzy drama, but anyway, I digress, and I can't remember what my point was anymore. But yeah, so it's not like that, isn't it? It's different and more waiting.
Yeah, lots more waiting. It's not as glossy.
There are people redoing makeup between scenes.
Exactly. I mean, the ones, if you want to know what it's, the fly on the wall things, like One Born Every Minute. Yeah.
Which I've never been able to watch.
And there's Ambulance and Hospital, I think one, isn't it? Or 24 Hours in A&E. Are actually, the fly on the wall ones are actually pretty good. I mean, yeah. Again, they're cut, so.
Make them more dramatic.
Somewhat more dramatic, and you're compressing 24 hours into 1 hour, so. But they're pretty, that is real, as you'll see.
Okay. Yeah. But it's, yes.
It's not everything.
Is blood and gore about right? On the sort of, or do they overdo it to make it more dramatic?
Don't watch them often, because you can't get overweight, you don't really want to. Isn't that much blood and gore normally?
No.
Blood sometimes.
But. And did that bother you, or do you get used to it? Or
blood?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah. And I guess all of the other sick and things, because I imagine kids must be sick quite a lot.
Oh, vomit, yeah, that's a fair bit of that.
Yeah, so I'm.
And poo.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you not ever get bored of nappies, or I guess you don't have don't have much to do.
I've long past sorting my own children's nappies out, given how old they are. But generally, I think parents are better at changing their children's nappies than me. So,
yeah.
If they're there.
Yes, obviously they'll sort them out. So one thing I wondered when my little was in hospital is, if you have kids, is it more hard to treat kids or not?
Because
I know in terms of like...
Is it harder to treat children? No, sort of. It's...
Can you emphasise more?
Yes, if you empathise more, and I think you probably have a better understanding of parental anxiety,
mm-hmm.
Which is good. Does it make it harder to treat the child because you have your own children? I think if the child is the same age as your kids, or there's something that rings a bell, then you do get a slight bit of resonance, which is can be hard. But most of the time, not so much. You have much better empathy, I think. Well, you have better empathy.
Okay.
Just from being a parent.
Yeah. Because you get that more when you have children, don't you? You just kind of understand things more.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the best bit of your job?
It's fun. They get better most of the time. Almost always.
And the worst bit of your job?
Well, they don't get better.
Yeah. Obviously, I guess.
Yeah.
It's quite hard. Yeah. Okay. And is there anything you could change about your job?
The actual medicine? No, not so much.
No.
It's fun.
So do you enjoy like the clinical challenge of it?
Yeah.
Working out what's for.
Yeah, and working with our team and actually assessing someone, I think they've got this, but it could be this, this and this. You know, the technical aspects of the job, if you have to do any minor procedures or whatever, they're fun, they're satisfying. But yeah, the sorting out a problem is fun, satisfying. Would I change anything about it? Not the medicine, no.
Well, the politics side
of it? Politics, I mean, that's difficult though, isn't it? It's a a national health service, yeah. And one of the most efficient in the world. So there's always going to be politics and challenges in whatever field you're in.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyone listening to this in their own job will recognise that.
Yeah.
How could they sort it out? Yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah, and I don't think I've got the job of trying to sort it out.
It's a big job. A really big job.
And do you find, like, because as you're a consultant now, do you get to do as much hands-on stuff as you did when you were sort of lower down?
You try to.
Is that the fun bit?
That's the fun bit.
Otherwise you just get dragged off into other stuff.
Meetings.
Are they the less fun bit?
They're not fun. Then. Necessary. Important and necessary. I don't think you'll find any doctor who would prefer going to meetings over seeing patients, because that's not particularly what you train for.
Okay. And then
it
comes with territory, I guess.
That's all you have to do. Yeah.
Okay. And then slightly off topic question. Cowpole.
Yes.
How do you get cowpole into a child who won't take cowpole?
Okay.
Is there a special technique?
Okay, well, the options are, depends what it is. If it's the taste of cowpole, there are many other
medicines.
Brands of paracetamol from available from all good supermarkets and pharmacists, which may just taste different.
Yeah.
And it gets by different things.
But if it's like as soon as you bring the syringe or the spoon out and they're just like, you know, they do that thing where they go, obviously you can't see me or something on mic, but like they close their mouths up.
It can be hard. Sometimes if you get them to giggle, you can squirt it in the side of the mouth or laugh. And sometimes when they're crying. The question is always, do they actually need it?
Mm-hmm. Do you think people give Calpol too much?
I mean, if you look at the reason, that's quite a good, actually quite a good program on this.
Was that when they had the sugar on the table or something? The Calpol on the table? My mum was talking about.
Dr. Chris from Operation Ouch.
Okay.
The doctor's aunt. I can't remember which one it was because they're twins. But it, he was doing a series about children's health. And it was about use of Calpol. And it was good. If a child is unsettled, a bit grumpy, I think there will be some parents who feel that Calpol's the right thing to give them, but...
Do they need it?
Do they actually need it?
So should it be saved for, like, temperatures and stuff?
It's temperatures when they're distressed. So temperature in and of itself is not a problem.
Okay.
Obviously, why have they got the temperature? Are they actually unwell? But, you know, the temperature is a body's response to fighting an infection is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The use for Calpol with a fever is when they're distressed by it. So if they're really unsettled or flakes out because the fever's really high, then that's when we would say you should use it. Not if they've got a temperature and they're at 38 and they're absolutely fine and running around. It's a strong argument to say actually you should
just leave them to it.
Leave it, see what happens.
And is there a temperature when you would start worrying? Like, is it like 40 degrees or something? Or again, does
not
really matter?
Not necessarily. Children can be very unwell with low-grade temperatures, and they can be running around absolutely fine with very high-grade fevers.
So it's more how they are.
It's how they are, what might be wrong with them.
Okay.
If the higher it is, it's more likely that they're going to be symptomatic, so from having a high fever, so yes, there may be a rationale for that, but you know, someone's worried, always worth ringing 111 to your GP.
Yes, good old 111.
Get the MA.
Yes, because they're the best port of call, aren't they, 111, if a GP's shut.
So if it's out of hours, you have to go through 111.
Yeah.
And, they can then, they'll triage you over the phone and direct you to an appropriate out-of-hours emergency care provider.
Excellent. And vaccines. Everyone should have their kids vaccinated. Is that right?
It's a parental choice, but my view is yes.
Yes, unless they've been told by a proper doctor there's a reason why they shouldn't have it.
Yes, and there are very few reasons.
Very few reasons. I would agree. My kids have had all their vaccines. I can't stand why you wouldn't, but there's a whole chiropractic thing that some chiropractors get very upset about vaccines. But I kind of feel that it's really not my scope of practice to comment on vaccines because I'm not a medical doctor. Right. So, questions I ask everyone.
Okay.
What's the best bit of health advice you've ever been given?
Well, generally.
Yeah.
Well, it's the lifestyle one. Don't drink too much, don't smoke, and try and do exercise twice a week. Keeps you healthy. For me, yeah.
So do you stick to that then?
I try to, as much as anyone. I try to. Everything in moderation, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And is there a piece of advice that you give your patients the most? I guess it would depend on what's wrong with them. But...
It depends what's wrong with them.
Or is it more advice you give the parents?
Yeah, exactly. Trust your instincts. Parents know their kids.
Yeah. It's quite hard, though, particularly for your first child, to know what's going on.
Absolutely.
I remember when my eldest was very little, quite the doctor quite a lot.
Yeah.
Got this one.
And then that's the thing, you know, they don't come with a manual.
Handy they did, because actually people have written lots of them.
Actually, yeah, but, you know, so when it's your first one and they're very little, yeah. We will see a lot of parents who have their first child and the child's quite young because it's all new. And that's, I understand. There'll be, as the child gets older, they will know what's normal for their child.
Yeah.
And as they come to their second or third, they know what is normal for children, more.
Yeah, and yeah, I think
when you know that 5 and 6 year old, when then he knows that the child is not right.
Yeah,
we haven't met that son or daughter.
Yeah, but then you go, this is not right.
It's not right. We'll try and find out why.
Okay, and I guess by the time you've had your second or third, you have more.
Yeah.
You trust yourself more.
Oh, I know why this isn't.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah.
My little one's not.
Yes, my second has been adopted an awful lot less than my first ever did. And do you have a worst habit or a guilty pleasure?
About my nails. Bad habit. Can't stop. Keep trying.
I see, I use clear nail varnish.
Do?
Yeah. So don't tie a bit of nail varnish.
Not sure that'll work for me.
No. You know, I like it because it's shiny and I can go, shiny, which makes me happy. But, yeah, it depends if you want shiny nails or not. It makes them not taste nice.
Yes.
Have you tried that stuff?
Yeah, it was alright, I didn't mind it. It's not too bad.
Well, you must really want to buy your nails.
It's really satisfying.
You get those chew toys.
Yeah. To sit there with dummy.
Yeah, they might not have to like wear that in front of parents, so.
No, just like a finger onesie, yeah.
They might go, get anyone else around there?
I'm on a different doctor.
Do people do that very often? Not for you particularly, but for others.
Sometimes. And so there'll be... everyone has their own style, people don't get on... doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But do people not get upset
get
with that?
Get on the style.
Or do they leave the room and then get upset about
it? No, I think most of the time... If a parent and a clinician aren't getting on, or a parent's finding it difficult with the child's clinician, then actually the consultant or clinician will know that. They'll be aware of it, and actually it's in everyone's interest. You need to have a sort of good relationship. So I would say hardly ever a surprise.
No.
If someone says, is it all right if I see that doctor? Yeah, okay. And actually you'll know that.
And sometimes would you go, I think perhaps you should see my colleague and just...
Yeah, not so. But yes, if you want another opinion. That's often quite what we'll say. We'll say, look, I could be wrong. You can always... Everyone's wrong from time to time.
Yeah.
So see what someone else thinks. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think patients mind that either, do they really?
No.
I think they like the more doctors in the room, the better. Or the more...
Most of the time.
Yeah. I think everyone's looking at, you know, because
if you have 5 doctors in the room, we've got 8 opinions.
Yeah, so none of them will be the same.
Okay.
Excellent. Brilliant. Is there anything that you wanted to mention? Any health issues? Health, like, you know, what sort of health awareness things for parents and their kids?
Sure, there should be.
Just get yourself vaccinated.
Vaccines are really important. Because it is a preventable significant illnesses.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast
today. Welcome.
It's been very interesting. Thank you very much and goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Total Health Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you need any information or links from the show, they'll be in the show notes. And if you have enjoyed it and you're a regular listener, maybe you'd leave us a 5-star review. I'd be really grateful. Or perhaps you'd share it with a friend or subscribe so you can hear our future episodes. Thank you so much. Goodbye.